Today we have changed the subject to concept of shirk. At the request and the question that we had in our last Saturday morning session, and she has graciously agreed to deliver a lecture on this subject. So let me not take any more time. Welcome, Rashida Sahiba. Ya Ali Madad.
Mola Ali Madad, all of you who are seekers of knowledge, who are following the Imam's guidance about personal search, I wish you all Ya Ali Madad in its true sense, that may Mola Ali help me and all of you to understand Hakikati knowledge, the knowledge of certainty, the knowledge which is based on the Quran, the final revelation of Allah. Today's topic, Aziz Bhai is very, very complimentary. He always says very positive things. But actually, I felt after last week's question that this is not just a random question. This is a question which is very much in the mind of many members of our Jamaat all over the world. Because we all have nowadays multi-faith friends. And some of our multi-faith friends may be saying things to us which we are not able to respond to. We are not able to defend our point of view because we do not have enough Quranic knowledge. I hesitated because I'm not sure on these Zoom sessions where there are so many people all at once, how many people have the background knowledge of the Holy Quran to understand what is a complex subject like shirk. But anyway, taking Mola's holy name, I am taking this subject on, and I'm going to see how far we can proceed with it. First and foremost, I would like to know from the people, there are 59 at this moment on my screen, could I ask you to just put your hand up if you have been able to attend the previous four sessions of this series on Imamah? Just put your hand up on the screen. I think this subject will be understood more by people who have attended and understood the previous four sessions. That was 4 hours of teaching. If you have understood that and you remember the points which are being made there, then it will be easier for you to understand today's subject. But this subject of shirk really, really requires all of us to have very, very important understanding of the Holy Quran, not only its zahiri meaning, but its many, many levels of batini meaning, of what we say, the ta'wil of the Quran, the ta'wil of the inner meaning, the esoteric meaning, the batin of the Quran. So I would request you all, those who are on this screen and those who are on the audio-only facility, try to concentrate, try not to chat during this session if you possibly can, and inshallah, in the question time, we will be able to gauge how many of you have really understood this subject. So Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. What I intend to do is first give you a context, a background. I'm going to give a detailed background, and then I will come to the subject of shirk. So first and foremost, to begin with, we have to define what is shirk. I'm sure that if I were to ask anybody here, they will tell me straight away the general meaning which is in the community, which is that shirk means to ascribe partners to Allah, to God. And if you look at the dictionary meaning, the dictionary meaning in an Arabic dictionary. Yesterday I checked the Oxford dictionary to see if this word is now in the English language, but they don't have it in the, they have the English word shirk, which means to avoid something. So in the Arabic dictionary to English, the word is simply described as polytheism, more than one God. So polytheism is a dictionary meaning, and the general meaning which people discuss amongst themselves is to ascribe partners to God. So if we take this general meaning, we've got to first of all ask, do all Muslims, no matter who they are, do they all have the same concept of Allah or God? Do they understand what God is equally amongst themselves? I'm asking this question because we have seen that the Holy Quran has what is known as bipolar language. It talks in two ways. Last session we saw how, which was about Wasila, you saw how you can prostrate to God, but you can, according to God's command, you have to prostrate to Adam. This is called bipolar. And apart from that, there are many other examples. For instance, one very famous example is that Allah tells us in the Quran that when he wants to create something, he simply says, kun, be, and it is. And then in other verses, he tells us that he created creation in 6 days. See, this is an apparent contradiction, apparent. Yes, it's not a real contradiction. God is not contradicting himself. This seems to us as though he is. It is an apparent thing. We think it is a contradiction. So we have to know about the Quran and its structure and its language. So now, what does the Quran say about God? Yeah, we are all very familiar with it in our dua, in the sixth part. And we know that this is the Surah 112 of the Holy Quran, Surah Ikhlas, that in this particular Surah, which is a very short one, it says, Kul hu Allahu ahad, the oneness of God. He did not beget, nor was he begotten, and none is like unto him. He is one, alone, unique. Nothing can compare to him. Okay. But in the same Quran, which we also have in our dua, Allah says that he has a hand, and that hand is the Holy Prophet. Yadullahi fawqaydihim. We all recite this from Surah 48, Ayah 10. And apart from our dua now, there are other verses in the Quran which I would like to give you. Surah 28, Ayah 88. It actually says, Kullu shayin halikun illa wajha. Everything is perishable except his, Allah's face. So we have Allah who has hand, he has face. In another ayat, he actually says he has two hands. In another one, he mentions eyes. And in another ayat, he mentions his tongue, lisanullah. Yes? In another ayat, he mentions jand, the side of the body. In another ayat, he mentions shin, which means the sock. In Arabic, it is sock. In English, it is shin. So do you see how many times in the Quran there are human attributes to God? God himself gives human attributes. And in addition to that, there are ayats about he comes, he goes, he sits on his throne. These are all human things. So this is where the difficulty starts. That because of the Quran's language being bipolar, dual, then that itself creates differences amongst Muslims in understanding the real meaning of the Quran. So first of all, I want to tell you something more about the diversity of interpretation amongst the Muslims, the Ummah. So for instance, those who accepted these human characteristics like eyes, hand, chin, etc., these are known as the anthropomorphists, those who believe that Allah has human characteristics. And to give you just one example, you know that amongst the majority exoteric group, they have four what they call imams. They are the heads of the four schools of jurisprudence, Hanifa, Shafi, Malik bin Anas, etc. I'm giving you one example of a group that believe that God has human characteristics, and they are the followers of the Malik bin Anas, and they accept these verses. Now, when they accept these verses, what happens? They are actually saying that those verses like Qul Huwallahu Ahad are not important, because they have accepted lock, stock, and barrel. Wholeheartedly, they accept the verses which are about the human characteristics. Now, on the other hand, you see, I want to point out that our Jamaat may think that, you know, there is a uniform interpretation amongst the exoteric majority. This is not the case. So amongst the other, amongst those who reject the human characteristics completely, they do not accept these ayats about eyes, hand, etc. There are one example of them are the Mu'tazila. They reject all the human attributes. They say God does not have any limbs or organs. So now we know of two examples. Yes, we are not going to go into more, just two examples. The followers of Malik bin Anas are anthropomorphists. They accept that God has hands, eyes, etc. And we have the Mu'tazila who reject that. And they say that God is something who doesn't have all these human attributes. Now, so the question arises, did God send the Holy Quran to guide people or to confuse them and make them, you know, grow into different interpretations? That's a question which we should all ask. Is the Quran a book of guidance, or is it a book that is being sent by Allah to confuse people and to make them contradict each other and to make them form groups and groups and groups with different views, with different interpretations? So now again, we have to look to the Quran for an answer. And this answer is in Surah 16, Ayat 43. And I have the whole here in front of me. I'm going to read it out to you. So Allah says, and we, the royal pronoun we, and we sent not, we did not send as our messengers before you, meaning he's talking to the Prophet Muhammad, and he's saying, we did not send messengers before you other than men whom we inspired. They were always men who had revelation, wahi, inspiration. So therefore, he's now talking to the Ummah, the people, all people. He's saying, so ask the people of Zikr if you know not. And in Arabic, the phrase is, fas'alu ahla zikri in kuntum la ta'lamun. Surah 16, Ayat 43, God is saying to people that if there is anything you do not know, anything you do not know, particularly in the Quran, then Allah is telling people, ask the Ahl al-Zikr, the people of remembering, remembrance. Who are they? They are the messengers and their progeny, the imams. So this is the Quranic notion. This is the Quranic concept. And we have, previous sessions, we have touched on the Surah 3, Ali Imran, ayat number 7, which is very, very important. That this ayat tells you that the Quran has been revealed by Allah to the Prophet, that it has two types of verses in it, clear ones and allegorical ones. It also tells you that there are some people in the world who try to interpret or do the ta'wil of the allegorical verses, but because they want to cause discord, disharmony, they want to bring division into the community. So some people try to do that. But then it says, nobody knows the inner meaning, the ta'wil of the Quran, except Allah and the rasikuna fil ilm, those who are firmly grounded in knowledge. And who are these rasikun fil ilm? They are the prophets and imams. So the Quran is telling us that the human beings will have questions about what is in the Quran, but at the same time, Allah has also provided the messengers, the Ahl al-Zikr, the Rasikun fil ilm, the Ulil Amra, so that we can go and ask them if there is something which we do not understand about the Quran. And you know, in the Ismaili history and Ismaili tariqa, this is very predominant. For instance, Maulana Ali, the first Imam of the cycle of Prophet Muhammad, he has a very famous saying, Saluni, Kabla Antafkuduni. You know, from this statement of his, ask me before you lose me. So ask me, Saluni, and from it, Maulana Ali has a title. He is also called Sahib Saluni. Ask me. And it is also known in history that the Khalifas have said that if Maulana Ali hadn't been there to answer their questions about the Quran during their Khilafah, they would have perished. So there are many, many evidences about this, that Maulana Ali had said, ask me before you lose me. And I would like to share with you one small story, which is about Maulana Ali. I am presently compiling an article about Maulana Ali because I know that the Jamaat doesn't have access to proper history of our imams. And in this, I have also included another ayat, which is Surah 45, ayat 29. And in this ayat, Allah says, this is our book. This our book speaks against you the truth. Haza kitabuna yantiku alaykum bilhaq. This kitab speaks against you with truth. When Maulana Ali, there is a story, when Maulana Ali was reading the Quran with the people in his time, a small group used to gather for deeper knowledge. And Maulana Ali was reading the Quran when he came to this Surah 45, ayah 29. He closed the Quran and he put the Quran on his head. And he said to this Quran, the written Quran, he said, speak, intik, from the word yantiku, intik, three times, speak, 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 this book. The Quran, the written Quran, did not speak. But who was speaking? Maulana Ali was speaking. This is a completely clear indication, and this is where we always have this description of the Imam as the Quran-e-Natiq, the speaking Quran. This is the background to that. So, those people who rejected the ta'wil, although the Quran talks about ta'wil, the word ta'wil is mentioned 17 times in the Quran. And in this ayat, which we have just looked at again, Surah 3, ayat 7, the word ta'wil is twice in it. But there are 15 other mentions of the word ta'wil in the Quran, a total of 17. But there are people who reject these, who do not follow these at all. So when they say that, you know, we can make up our own mind, or we can choose whom we should ask, again, the example of that I'm going to give you, it's a very interesting example from the same person I have already mentioned, Malik bin Anas, one of the four so-called imams of the Sunni majority. Malik bin Anas says, it is famously known that he mentions a Surah 20, ayat 5, in which it is said that Ar-Rahman istawa 'ala al-Arsh, that Ar-Rahman, the merciful, is established or sitting on his throne. What did Malik ibn Anas say to his followers? He said that this istawa, sitting, we know Allah is sitting on the throne, because the Quran mentioned it. How he is sitting is unknown. It's majhul. We don't know how he is sitting. But to have faith in it is compulsory. And do not ask about it, because if you ask about it, this is bid'ah, this is innovation. You are committing a sin if you ask, how is God sitting on the throne? So this is the way such groups, they interpret the Quran. They do not care to ask questions. But in the Ismaili Tariqa, I think you are all aware of Hazrat Imam's farmans for the last so many decades, that the Imam always emphasizes that our Tariqa is a Tariqa of the intellect. So asking questions is encouraged. Here, now I want to come to another question. So somebody must have already in their mind, why does God, I mean, we have had it on this session before, somebody had asked the question, why has God made the Quran so difficult? Yeah, so you could turn that question and say, my question here would be, why has God used bipolar language? Two types of language, which to us seem like contradictions, but they are not really contradictions. Why has Allah done that? Because in the Holy Quran, Allah is talking about two dimensions. He's talking about the physical world, and he's talking about the spiritual world. And the reference for that is Surah 7, ayat 54, in which he says, Allah lahul khalq wal amr. Allah's are the creation and the command. See, the Quranic language is not so easy to understand. You have to have knowledge of the previous da'i's explanations as well to really understand it. But this phrase, Allah, has two dimensions. You know, the whole ayat is pretty long. It says, 754, here we are. Lord, your Lord is Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. Then he mounted the throne. He covers the night with the day, which is in haste to follow it, and has made the sun and the moon and the stars subservient by his command. And then this short sentence, Allah lahul khalqu wal amr. His is the creation and the command. So there are two worlds, as I explained, physical world, spiritual world. The physical world is the world of creation, and the spiritual world is the world of command. Yes, and so there are both these worlds are described in the Holy Quran. And who is going to know about the spiritual world? Only the rasikun fil ilm, or the ulil amra, or the ahle zikr, the progeny of the Holy Prophet, because they know the spiritual world. The spiritual world is in them, so they know it, and they know the physical world. whereas all of us ordinary human beings, we only experience the physical world. Maybe there are a handful of people who have progressed in ibadah, and they have an inkling, they have a glimpse of the spiritual world, but the vast, vast majority are not like that. And Allah has therefore always kept on the planet Earth amongst the human beings, prophets and imams who will explain to us the world of command, the spiritual world, because the spiritual world is above time and space, whereas the physical world is within time and space. So this is why we have apparently contradictory verses, because we do not know which dimension do these ayats belong to. So the verses which we have used so far, Qul huwallahu ahad, which domain does this surah belong to? It belongs to the domain of the spiritual world. That this description of Allah is not to do with the physical world, it is to do with the spiritual world. And this is why our great Pir Sadruddin, you know, he writes things like Jene na nam, na tam, na rang, na rup. So he's saying that Allah is somebody who has no name, he has no space or place, he has no color, and he has no features, shape, rup, surat. But in the same peer then, in another dinar, tuhi gur tuhi nar, he tells us, ek fikar munivar amane che tamari, manas rupe sahib jaan. So he's pointing out to us that in the physical world, this Allah who has no name, no naam, no tam, he, when he manifests in the imam, then he has all these things. And because he has all these things, he has a name, he has a place, he has a color, and he has a form, shape, that's when people think, oh, he is just like us. There's no difference between him and us. So we have to be very clear that when we talk about the physical world, then the manifestation will have all the attributes and the characteristics of the physical world. Now, take this quotation. Last time, I requested whoever attends my series that they should read the chapter of Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah in his memoirs. I don't know how many of you managed to do that. I will not start asking that. It is up to your own conscience to realize whether you did it or not. On page 178 of the English publication, British print, not the American, yeah, because the order is different. On page 178, Maulana Sultan Shah says, the Shias have therefore always held that after the Prophet's death, divine power, guidance, and leadership manifested themselves in Hazrat Ali. I repeat that sentence. You remember, Maulana Sultan Shah has written this book for the entire world. It is in the international language of the world, which is English. And what does he say? He says that after the Prophet's death, divine power, Allah's power, Allah's guidance, and Allah's leadership manifested themselves in Maulana Ali. Because Maulana Ali was in the physical world. So this had to be manifested. Now, I'm really happy that this session follows the previous one about the concept of wasila, intermediary, and I'm going to just revise it very quickly because many people are not attending the series all the time. in the previous session, we discussed in detail that Hazrat Adam was created by Allah himself, and he had given Hazrat Adam the Surat al-Rahman, the image of the compassionate, that Hazrat Adam was the copy of Allah, if you like, on this planet Earth, because here it is a physical manifestation. And we are told in the Quran that Allah had breathed his spirit into him. Allah had taught him all the names, all the knowledge, that Allah commanded the angels to prostrate to him. Yes, we had looked at the ayats about prostration. I had given you 41, 37, 2, 34, and 38, 72, and 75. All those ayats show that on the one hand, Allah says that you should not prostrate to the sun and the moon. But in the next ayat, he says to the angels, prostrate yourselves to Adam. And in the third reference, which I had given, that when I have fashioned him and breathed my spirit into him, then fall down before him prostrate. And Iblis didn't do it. And so Iblis was driven away from the divine court. He became Shaitan. We also looked at many other ayats under so many headings. And what did he find? That yes, you can obey God, but you have to obey the Prophet, Allah, the Prophet, and the Ulil Amr. If you want forgiveness, you have to go to the Prophet, and then only Allah will forgive you. Zakat, the Prophet has to take the zakat from you and then to give you a dua to purify you and to make you grow. And if you want to love Allah, then you have to love the Prophet's progeny. If you want to do bayah, you have to do it on the hand of Allah, which is in the physical world, in a manifested form. You have to prostrate to Allah as well as to his khalifa, his vice chairman, his prophet or imam. So everything related to Allah is through his khalifa, through his physical manifestation. And also in my last session, I mentioned, to make it easy for you to understand, that the imam, the meaning of intermediary, wasila, is that he's like a bridge. What is a bridge between? What are the two things he is connecting? He is connecting the world of command with the world of creation. So he is connecting divinity with humanity. He's a bridge. He has both the aspects. Now, this is where my background finishes. And it's taken me 25 minutes to just give you the background. So if you have all understood this background, which I have gone into detail, because without this background, you will not be able to understand what is shirk. So now I'm coming to the subject of what is this shirk? What is this ascribing partners to Allah? Is there such a thing? And what is its real meaning? So for this, I have a hadith for you of the Holy Prophet. This is an amazing hadith. Its words are really, really amazing. And also it is a hadith which is accepted by all schools of thought in Islam. In other words, it is not does not belong to only one or the other group. It is accepted by everybody. And in fact, if you want a reference from the Sunni side, then this is Jalaluddin Suyuti in his book called Jami'ul Saghir, which means a shorter compilation of hadith. I'm not going to bother with the Arabic because this might just take too much time as well. I'm just going to give you the English. The Prophet says, shirk in my community, ummati, shirk in my community is more hidden, akfa. You know the word kafi, kafi, hidden. He's using the superlative, of the comparative, more hidden. It is more hidden than what? Than the treading, the walking of a black ant on a black rock in a very dark night. I'm pausing here so that these words should sink into your understanding and memory. The prophet, the holy prophet himself said, shirk is so hidden in my community that it's like the walking of a one little black ant on a black rock in a black dark night. It's a very hidden thing. What people think shirk is not really shirk. It is so hidden that they themselves do not know that they are practicing it. It's so hidden. So now we have to look at how do you understand this? So to understand this from the hadith, we know that this means that there must be an open shirk and then there must be a hidden shirk, right? So this open shirk, which people accuse each other of doing, is saying, oh, you are ascribing to partners to God. And this is not correct because he is above everything. So we ask ourselves questions that if Allah is above everything, if Allah is really Allahu Akbar, yeah, Allah is greater than, and he is Subhanallah, you know, no attributes can be given to him, na rang, na roop, na naam, na tam, then how can you say such and such a person is same as Allah? There's no comparison. And I had mentioned that in my answer in the previous question to the question about shirk. I had said that you can only use the word shirk when you compare two homogeneous, two things which you can compare. Like you can compare two human beings, but you can't compare a human being to a donkey or to a lion or to an elephant. They are not the same species. They are different. So in the same way, I want to remind you of my previous, not the Wasila one, but the one before that session. You remember that I actually quoted the story of Maulana Rumi about the parrot who broke a bottle of precious oil and his master hit him on his head. He became bald. He fell silent. And then one day a bald dervish, a human being, I hope you all understand what a dervish is, not a beggar, but a very religious person who is, completely unaware of this world, right? A dervish was walking past and he was bald. So this parrot, the bird, actually comes back to his language and he says, oh, bald man, did you also break the bottle of oil of your owner, master? And everybody laughed because a parrot, a bird, is comparing himself or itself to a human being. You cannot do that. So we say that shirk is only possible when he, Allah, is in the manifest form, in the manifest form of a prophet or an imam. That's when shirk is possible. So what Iblis did when he refused, you know, he was saying, Ya Rabbi, to God, oh my sustainer, oh my Lord. But he refused to bow down, to prostrate to Adam. Why? Because he and Adam were alike. They could be compared. He was comparing himself to Adam. And he was finding himself superior to Hazrat Adam. He was being arrogant. So that is shirk. And this is why Maulana Rumi, I had quoted it, because this is something which I learned a long time ago, although I don't know much Farsi. Jumla alam zin sabab, gumrah shirk. The whole world has gone astray. Why? Kam kasi zabdali haq are Gashim, because they look at the prophets and imams, the awliya of God, and they say, oh, they are human beings. We are human beings. We are equal. This is shirk. But they don't even know that they are committing shirk. It is so hidden. So what I need to end with now, so that there is some time for questioning is as well, this is called shirk-e-khafi, which the Prophet describes in this amazing hadith, which I've already quoted to you twice. And this means that when human beings reject the Khalifa, the vicegerent, the intermediary between human beings and God, they reject him. And sometimes they choose their own leader. Sometimes, many times they choose their own leaders. This is the real shirk, because you cannot do shirk between a human being and Allah, who has no attributes, who is above everything. He's in the world of command. He's absolute. He's one. He's has no rang, no naam, no tam. So, you know, throughout history, Iblis was not the only one who went astray because of this. Throughout history, we all know the story of Hazrat Habil being martyred by his brother, his own brother, Qabil. Because he was not ready to accept that Habil had the spirit of God, the Ruhul Allah, he had the knowledge of God, right? And in throughout history, particularly our history, because we are the ones who believe in the continuity of Imamah, you know, throughout history, from Maulana Ali, others have challenged and others have taken on themselves what was really the right of the Imams. I'm not going to give any names because, you know, we have Maulana Hazri Imam tells us that we are now living in a time of pluralism and we have to have mutual respect. So I'm not going to name names, but you, all of you, even if you have very little knowledge of history, you know that so many Imams were rejected, and in fact, somebody else was put in their place. Okay? So this is shirk, not what the Ismailis are doing. Not what the Ismailis are doing. When the Ismailis prostrate to the Imam, that is according to Allah's command, which is in the Quran. When the Ismailis obey the Imam, this is in the Quran. This is a command of God. When the Ismailis love the Imam, this is in the Quran. This is God's command. When Ismailis do bayah on the hand of the Imam, this is according to the Quran. If Ismailis give zakat, the son to the Imam, this is according to God's command in the Quran. Anything you wish to say, it is all there. Whatever we Ismailis do to our Imam is all substantiated by proof from the Holy Quran. And therefore, I hope that today you will all have realized that we need much more knowledge of the Holy Quran and Hadith, and that we need to, through this knowledge, we have to have the confidence that we are on the Sirat al-Mustaqim, and that what we are doing is according to Allah's command. What others do, because we live in a world of pluralism, we have to say, and this is what the Quran also says, to you your faith and to us our faith. Lakum dinakum waliya din. This is in Surah Kafirun, which Maulana Hazrat Imam has quoted twice in his Farmans. To you, your faith, and to us, our faith. We should practice our faith with that confidence and that certainty, but the certainty cannot come without knowledge. And confidence cannot come without certainty and knowledge. And I'm going to finish right at this point now and allow for any questions.